Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 415. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. You can stroll over to Amazon and buy my book. It's called Seriously, What Am I Doing Here? The Adventures of a Wondering and Wandering Gay Jew. And of course, go to that Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have a great show for you this week with a ton of time to go over this week's latest LGBTQ news that's out there. But first, let me introduce you to this week's guest. Jeffrey Masters is an actor, a writer, a host, a podcaster, and so much more. His writing has appeared in The Huffington Post, Pop Sugar, and Hello Mister. He has appeared in such work as Rescuing Rachel, Manny in Real Life, Top Flight Security, and Love Recall. He is currently documenting the stories of the LGBTQ community on his podcast, LGBTQ&A, which I enjoy so, so immensely. LGBTQ&A has been featured in the New York Times, USA Today, GLAAD, and was ranked number 2 on the list of the top podcasts to listen to in 2017 by BuzzFeed. And right this very second, he is here with us. Jeffrey, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, thank you.
It's got to be weird to be on the other side of it.
It is. I'm so used to controlling conversations, talking a lot, doing what I'm doing right now that I don't know if I can just answer.
We can put you in control. Where would you like to start, Jeffrey?
Oh my God, let's start at your childhood. What was that experience like?
And by that, I turn it around to say, Jeffrey, were you truly an Eagle Scout?
Oh my God, that is 100% true.
I don't even know what that means.
It means that I rose through the ranks of Boy Scouts. I got to the top. I did a massive project, and they gave me this award. I think most interesting enough that my one caveat is that there's so many stories about people having queer experiences, whether they're camping or in Boy Scouts or Boy Scout camp. And I did all that stuff, and I didn't have a single thing that even hinted at homosexuality.
You actually sound disappointed there.
I am. I missed out. I stuck with it for so long.
What was the big Eagle Scout project?
Wow. So the stereotype is that everyone builds a bench or a bridge, but as a little young artistic person, I did this when I was 15, I built an interactive exhibit in the Greensboro, North Carolina Children's Museum.
Wow. Do we discover rainbows? Yeah. How are we interacting there?
So it was just it was part of a home under construction exhibit. And so we created a massive Velcro wall and different Velcro pieces that you can move around it to create different structures and images on this, what was a Velcro wall, really.
I love it. I love it. I heard you assert earlier that there was no homosexuality to be found in your experience there, and yet that story belied that.
I was hinting at it, at that age. But in North Carolina, the bathroom state, it was not as accepted as it is now.
Yes. I gotcha. How did little Jeffrey Masters make it from North Carolina all the way out to that big land of L.A.?
He drove by himself.
Really?
He graduated college. Yeah. And I did not want to get cold feet. And so I graduated college. And 2 weeks later, I was on the road.
Wow.
I'm actually in the process of moving right now. And it's kind of depressing that when I got to Los Angeles, I had everything I owned in my little car. And now I have movers coming on Sunday.
How do you feel about that? That's a lot.
I don't have that many possessions. So I'm not a hoarder, but I love my dresser. I have a bed frame that I will need in my new place. So it's I'm not as transient as I once was, but I think that comes with a growing process,
it does.
Right?
It does. It absolutely does. We've heard from so many of your colleagues over the year who make that transition to L.A. to try to, quote unquote, make it in L.A. And everybody is doing so well out there, and I'm so proud of everybody. How has the experience treated you?
It's been a learning process. It has been so much fun. It is so much more than I ever thought it could be. It is so much more complicated and complex. And it's fantastic. I completely love Los Angeles, and I love the entertainment industry. And I feel very fortunate that, you know, my main thing is a podcast where I get to interview LGBTQ people, and like very similar to you. And I feel honored to be able to sit face to face and talk to people I've looked up for years, and to have an excuse to do that.
Yeah.
And also in terms of podcasting, like this didn't exist.
Right.
Or actually it's existed for quite a while, but it didn't have like the notoriety that it has now. So I didn't even know that this was an option.
And we're going to talk all about the podcast. What would more grown-up Jeffrey Masters tell that little Jeffrey Masters who was driving across the country about making it? What do you wish you had known when you were starting out there in LA?
That's a hard question. I think just that you were not going to have the friends that you graduated college with. You're not going to have those people forever. Some of them, yes, but not all of them. And that was perhaps, I mean, it sounds like so redundant now, but that was like a really massive learning experience for me.
Yeah, that's a hard one. I'm a college professor. I try to prepare students for that. It's very difficult. So you mentioned the podcast. I enjoy the podcast immensely. I have to tell you that right off the bat.
Thank you.
How did LGBT Q&A come about?
There wasn't a podcast that I knew about or an interview experience where they were covering the entire community.
Yeah.
And where they were covering it in terms of our entire diversity of experiences.
Right.
And so, you know, I've interviewed a queer Muslim. I don't see those people anywhere in the media. I've interviewed a transgender immigrant. I feel like I'm just tokenizing, but you know, I'm really proud of our diversity because I am a white, cisgender, queer man, and that's just kind of like what we tend to see in the media, and I'm kind of sick of those stories.
Who is Jeffrey Masters as an interviewer?
He is very casual. He's very prepared. He knows exactly what he wants to talk to the person about while still allowing for the conversation to go off in 1,000 different directions as it needs to be. And I tend to let the conversation go where I want it to go or where it leads itself as long as it's interesting.
That, of course, is going to beg the question, what is interesting to you? How do we go about defining that? It's so difficult sometimes in the podcast world to keep people stimulated over a stretch of time, particularly with someone they might not have heard about. How do you approach that?
I think that everybody is an expert in something.
Yeah.
And I think that if they are an expert in something and they're passionate about that, then that is very interesting to hear people talk about their passions.
Yeah.
And I think that we can relate to anything. Also, in terms of, I'm only interviewing LGBTQ people.
Right.
And for us, our community is so freaking important. And people in different age ranges have found community in different ways. You know, right now it's all about the internet. 40 years ago, people from those generations, like it was like, you couldn't even like touch in public.
Yeah.
So I think that fascinating.
I love that. Look, in just a couple weeks, not even a couple weeks, in like a week, you're going to celebrate 1 year of doing the LGBT Q&A. How has it evolved over the past year? Which, by the way, congratulations. It's very exciting.
Thank you. You're the first person to notice that. I appreciate that. Yeah. How has it evolved? I have become a better interviewer just from more practice. Evolve-wise, as a very specific thing, in terms of like keeping it interesting, I don't have a problem cutting people off if they're going off a tangent that I don't want to hear about. And when I say I don't want to hear about it, I mean I don't want to hear about it because it's not going to be interesting to our audience. You know, we are very polite people. We're trained to be kind. And sometimes as the interviewer, you need to step in and say like, whoa, 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 go back to this part because that's really interesting. Another thing is too that I know... evolving wise, I know exactly, I know if a person is going to be a good guest or not without having to do that much research. I was doing a lot of research on people before I booked them to see if they would be good or not. These are like the lesser known people because I cover people you have heard of and haven't heard of, and I need good talkers. And so now I can like see very clearly the people that are going to be good.
Yeah. Although, have you not had one of those moments where an interview starts and you realize, wow, this is just so not going in the direction I wanted it to?
Oh, one moment? Oh my God, I have like 10. And sometimes that is so exciting, you know?
Sometimes. I can think of sometimes it's been really exciting, but I would say over 415 episodes, there were a couple times where I'm like, oh, wow. often I have control over this. I have none right now. So sometimes not as exciting.
Yeah. Well, I think that we have probably have different experiences as well, because I do all of mine face-to-face.
Yes.
And so I actually don't know how to do them over the phone, because every interview I do, I always ask at least one question that makes me uncomfortable to ask, because I want interesting answers. I think that it's okay to experience that sensation of being uncomfortable, and it makes it interesting to hear. And I only can get away with that because I'm looking in their eyes and they're seeing a kind person who genuinely is asking this question for a good reason.
I don't even understand the concept of having to think about what I'm wearing for one of these interviews.
What are you wearing right now?
That's not the point of the story, Jeffrey. That is not the point of the story. Give me some highlights. Who jumped out at you as saying, oh my gosh, this, you just pumped your fist in the air, even in your head afterwards, and said, this was an awesome experience.
So the first person that came to my mind is Shane Ortega. He is the first trans person to serve openly in the military, and he was really massively monumental in getting Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed and the transgender ban repealed. We met in October, and it was just an amazing experience, also because his story, which I didn't realize until we were talking, was that his mother actually is a lesbian and served in one of the armed forces divisions, and he saw how hard it was on her to have to stay in the closet. And he wanted to get Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed for her, for people like her.
Yeah.
Not for him selfishly. We'd actually, he was new to LA. We'd actually become really like good friends, which is like a really lovely thing. And he came back on for a brief episode 3 weeks ago when the new transgender ban was announced or proposed. The ban that's not a ban.
Yeah.
And so it's just meeting people like that story about like transgender people in the military, but you don't know his name perhaps. So kind of putting name to that is really exciting, I believe.
Amazing. The latest episode with Our Lady J, who I just absolutely adore. That was some good stuff, Jeffrey.
Thank you. She's this wild energy about her.
Yeah.
Again, like we're doing this face to face. It's so completely kind. And I hate having to say that because, you know, this is LA, but, when I met her, I was just kind of overwhelmed with her spirit. And I'm not even that kind of person that talks like that. But for her, it was just so apparent. It was kind of overwhelming.
Ah, such good stuff. Let's just do a bigger narrative thread for all the episodes. One of the listeners out there, they tune in, they go on over to iTunes, they subscribe to LGBT Q&A. When they're done with an episode, any one of the episodes, what do you want people to walk away with? How do you want them to feel?
I want them to walk away realizing how diverse our community is.
Yeah.
And how there's not a single narrative or experience that tracks across all of us. And I think that's doubly important. But, you know, I'm in LA, I work in the film industry, because on TV and film and in books, there's kind of like a single narrative that's shown. And I think that there's a complexity to queer experience and the queer life that would be really hard to show on TV, because we need to be invested in storylines in order to keep watching, but often our storylines don't track.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think that getting confirmation that the way your experiences in your life, that this doesn't track with other experiences, that getting confirmation that is okay, I would be a big goal of mine.
Give me the Jeffrey Masters top three most wanted dream guests for LGBT Q&A.
Okay, so one of them is a recent guest of yours. It's Kate Bornstein.
Love. Absolutely love.
Oh my God, I've read all of her books. I read her memoir, A Queer in Pleasant Danger, and then Gender Outlaws back to back.
Yeah.
And it just kind of cracked open my skull.
Oh, it was incredible. And I have to tell you, I hadn't read Gender Outlaw in so many years. I read it as an undergrad at NYU. And let's just say that was a long time ago. And to read it again the week before she was on the show, just to do, you know, I was pretty familiar with Kate, but to refresh my memory and to have that book hold up the way it holds up. And then, you know how you realize again in those first couple minutes, I'm not going to have a ton of control over this. I was so happy to give Kate control of that interview, and it just worked out. So yes, we must get Kate on your show.
Yes. I met her briefly when her documentary came out a year ago, and she was lovely. So I'm trying to figure out if she's going to be in LA, which is less likely, or if I can be in New York and we can figure it out. But I'm just such a massive fan of her work. Here's one out of left field that I would love to interview.
Do it.
Are you aware about Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love?
No. I mean, am I aware of Elizabeth? I'm aware of Elizabeth Gilbert, yes. Yeah.
I said it like a sentence fragment.
I was like, is she a lesbian? I did not know that.
So she wrote another follow-up book to Eat, Pray, Love called Committed, because the guy that she met at the end of Eat, Pray, Love, I think was Brazilian or Portuguese. He was not American, and they ended up getting married because he green card stuff. And they were in love, though. It was love, but they were like, okay, sure, we'll get married. And so 10 years in, about 2 years ago, her best friend gets cancer, and she's distraught. And through this experience of caring for her, she realizes that my best friend, who I love and I've loved for so long, I'm actually in love with her.
Oh, wow.
And so she divorced her husband. It was very amicable. She made this big announcement that, you know, we're now together in an item. And they recently had a small wedding ceremony where they got married.
You got to get her on the show.
I agree. I think that, you know, that her partner, or I guess wife has cancer, and I don't think it's a kind that is going to be cured.
Okay.
So, you know, she's caught up with that. But so eventually, I just think it's so amazing to have a public person who is publicly, she's an amazing writer who's written about her love life so much, to have a public person come out like that. And I just want to know about that experience.
All right. That's a good one. Give me one more. I want one more.
Okay. This is going to sound so pompous, but I have a good reason. I think that we throw around the word genius a lot nowadays, you know,
yes.
Like it's very trendy. I think that Tony Kushner is actually a genius.
Oh, yes.
He wrote Angels in America. I know that you know that. But, you know, I think that his plays are so completely groundbreaking and mind-blowing, and they still are relevant. They still work today.
All right. We're going to get him on the show, too. I want all these people for your show. And again, because these are people who I want to see in person, you interviewing them face to face. Because again, I don't know what I would wear to interview any of those people.
Thank you. And then I have actually a couple of like bigger guests that I'm like talking to at the moment. So I don't want to spoil anything. But I think that like we're like, it's all in our grasp. You know?
There it is. I was going to ask, it's always what we ask. What is coming up for you that you are excited about, sir?
Oh my God, I cannot talk about, this is such an LA answer where I say I can't talk about things. I have some great authors coming up next month.
Okay.
I'm a really big reader and I really love showing our authors. So, but that, you know what, here's a name. Jeffrey Marsh is a genderqueer actor. They're going to be in LA next month. We have them coming on. The Battle of the Jeffreys, here it comes.
Oh, Jeffrey is wonderful. Jeffrey is wonderful. That will be
so much fun. Thank you.
That will be an amazing conversation. Now, we have to conclude by asking, what did I leave out for you? I don't talk to that many people who do what I do, in that you are interviewing these incredible people and you are lending your voice in such an authentic and accessible way. What did I forget to ask you, Jeffrey?
You covered everything, Ken, A+ on your interview skills. I'm so proud of you. You are growing up so fast.
That was wonderful. That was wonderful. Listeners, this is what we need you to do right this very second. Stroll on over to jeffrey-masters.com. That's jeffrey-masters.com. And you can learn all about Jeffrey. You can link right up to the LGBT Q&A podcast. You can, of course, find it on iTunes. You can find it anywhere good podcasts are available. Jeffrey, I love what you're doing. You're putting yourself out there in a really and truly accessible, authentic, and beautiful way. So you must keep doing what you're doing, sir.
I promise I will.
Just
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, as I said at the top of the show, we have so much time to talk about all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. I will again remind you that if you have any guest ideas, whether it's someone national, international, or someone who is in your local municipality who's doing something really, really cool to lift up the voices of the LGBTQ community, we want to feature them on our show. You just send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. That's ken@thisshowisogay.com, and tell me who you're thinking about, and we will try to get them on the show. And it's okay if you nominate yourself. We would love to talk to you too. It just requires that you're doing something cool, that you are pursuing your passion, that you are using your voice in your own unique way to make a difference. Again, ken@thisshowisogay.com. Let's talk about the news. Just a few weeks after announcing a blanket ban on trans people in the U.S. military, President Donald Trump has commended the U.S. Army for being no place for bigotry. How do those two things live in the same place? The commander-in-chief was accused of major hypocrisy after an address he made this past week about the U.S. military. He said this, quote, "When we open our hearts to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice, no place for bigotry, and no tolerance for hate." He said this despite personally banning trans troops just a few weeks ago. Remember? He tweeted three different tweets, and that effectively created a policy. By the way, it didn't create a policy because he didn't write a policy in tweets, but as Kellyanne Conway has reminded us every time she's on the news, he didn't create policy. He announced that a policy is forthcoming. So he said he was doing in those tweets a great favor to the military. He has cited costs, saying that it would be too expensive to cover transgender health benefits for those serving. But despite that, a new study came out, as we indicated at the end of last week's show, that it will cost the military 114 times more to ban transgender troops than it would to allow them to enlist. Well, naturally, many, after he gave this speech this week, took to social media to denounce his words against bigotry. One person said, "You're right, Donald Trump. We veterans do have each other's six. Why we oppose you trying to kick out our trans comrades out of the military?" Someone else, Tyler Bartley, said Trump forgot to say "accept the trans" when he was giving his Afghanistan speech praising the troops. And tons more comments. So he was saying that everything is great in the military. There is no bigotry. This despite him saying during those three tweets, announcing policy, not creating policy, but announcing policy, that trans people in the military just are not welcome there. It creates too much divisiveness, some confusion on the part of the commander-in-chief. Certainly a lot of confusion about his comments about Charlottesville and the follow-up to Charlottesville. As I said last week, we must be using our voices. There certainly are LGBTQ angles to this story. The Ku Klux Klan is taking aim at the LGBT community, who they believe should be killed. They should be killed in order to end the HIV and AIDS crisis. Leaders from the Louisiana chapter of the group have distributed flyers urging people to join their group and slaughter gay people in an effort to, quote, "save our land, join the Klan, white power." Now, why are we covering this? I'm of two minds about this. On the one hand, it's important to know that the Ku Klux Klan is not just about white pride. They are horrendously anti-gay. But also, it's important that we remind ourselves that we don't need an anti-gay angle to be fighting white nationalism. Even though there is an LGBT angle to the story, as I said repeatedly last week, we must be stepping up. We must be stepping up for our brothers and sisters of color, because there is so much difference to be made, and it only can happen when we all stand together. So there you go, the KKK. They would like to do away with gay people, as they want to do away with everyone but them. Let's talk about Australia. LGBT campaigners and politicians have expressed shock at an anti-gay poster ahead of Australia's same-sex marriage vote. The poster shows a child with their head in their arms while two fists hold rainbow-colored belts. The shocking anti-gay ad, which has been seen in Melbourne, Australia, boasts the words, I can't even say this. This is an actual poster. It says, "Stop the fags." That's what it actually says. In bold white print, clearly visible from a distance, critics say the poster proves the upcoming marriage equality ballot will allow for an outpouring of bigotry. The poster uses nonsense stats to claim that the children of gay parents are disproportionately abused. It claims that, quote, 92% of children raised by gay parents are abused. It also claims that 51% have depression and 72% are obese. It is believed that the poster originated on a Nazi website and was subsequently printed out and pinned up in the Heffernan Lane area of Melbourne. Australian Labour leader Bill Shorten labeled it disgusting, saying, quote, Labour opposed this postal survey because we feared exactly this kind of hurtful filth would emerge. This kind of garbage isn't debate, it's abuse. I'm so sorry that LGBTQ Australians have to put up with it. Let's make sure there's an overwhelming yes vote in response. So again, this is a big vote that's happening in Australia. They do not have marriage equality in Australia. And we knew this was going to happen, that this is an opportunity for so much bigotry to come out. There's another poster that's out that says children deserve a mother and a father and encourages people to vote no, to vote down marriage equality. There are some celebrities who are getting involved in this cause on both sides of it. There are some former politicians who are getting involved. This is a big deal happening in Australia right now. We kind of assume, well, gosh, there are these very liberal and accepting other countries. That's not what's happening in Australia right now. They are very much struggling with marriage equality. And as we lead up to this vote, we are going to see worse and worse as the desperation increases and increases. Now, according to a news poll, the pro-equality yes campaign has a huge lead, so this is a good thing. 63% of respondents said they intend to back yes in the vote, while 30% say that they will vote against the proposal, and 6% remain uncommitted. But holy cow, is it important that people actually show up to vote. So as we lead up to this vote, and this vote is coming up, we are going to see more and more bigotry because people are getting more and more desperate. We have to understand that people feel their way of life is being threatened. That's what they think marriage equality is going to lead to, that their way of life is going to be threatened. When in fact, we know, nope, someone's marriage does not affect your marriage. Allowing gay people to get married, allowing marriage equality, does not affect your marriage. Not at all. In fact, there were other things that were affecting your marriage. The divorce rate was already high before you allowed for same-sex marriage. So we will, of course, keep our eyes on what is going on in Australia. But let's talk about Russia. LGBT activists in Russia held the biggest pride celebration in St. Petersburg while also facing off with police and far-right protesters. An estimated 100 people turned out for the 8th annual LGBT Pride in St. Petersburg Field this week. Riot police watched closely as the group, which is believed to be the biggest turnout since 2010, waved rainbow flags and signs. Sveta, a lesbian activist, said this, quote, everyone has their own reason to come to Pride. Many of my friends didn't come because they were afraid to be discriminated at work, to lose their job, or to get expelled from university. We want to remind you all that holding Pride celebrations in Russia is increasingly difficult since the introduction of the gay propaganda law in 2013. This controversial law, which has been condemned by the European Court of Human Rights, can carry a fine of up to 500,000 rubles, which is $8,000, $8,000. This year's Pride was nearly blocked from going ahead as it is limited to being held in free speech zones, such as the Field of Mars, which is where they held this. However, a policy dictates that free speech zones can only allow one event to take place at any one day. An event in remembrance of World War II was held the same day, meaning that the Pride event was rejected. However, only 5 people attended that event and protested Pride goers for the duration of it. There are some incredible, incredible pictures of these 100 people gathering. I can't even wrap my mind around how much courage that must take. We had all the drama here around Cleveland Pride, but we have 2 prides, and it's not about fear about showing up for Pride. It's about how are these 2 prides going to be working with each other. Look at 100 people there in Russia who showed up despite some real consequences, despite some real fears. So our hats off to them, and oh my gosh, do we salute you, our Russian brothers and sisters. Let's turn to the world of gaming. A video game has been overwhelmed by an impromptu wave of support for LGBTQ rights. Splatoon 2. It's called Splatoon 2. It's a Nintendo Switch game in which players compete online as humans or squids. You can compete as a human or a squid to fire ink at targets and each other, but for many users, it has become so much more. Players can post in-game messages, and after one user stated that LGBT squids are fresh as hell, heartwarming posts started popping up all over the place. This is really exciting. This was all reported by Mashable, the publication Mashable. After the game became a center of support for furries last month, players have come together to spread the good word about the entire LGBTQ rainbow. One player wrote this quote, "This squid has no gender and there's nothing you can do about it." Another person wrote, "It's turf war, not TERF war," which is TERF is trans exclusionary radical feminists. So a lot of pro LGBT stories. Another commenter wrote this quote, "Love my fellow trans squids. We are amazing." This spontaneous flood of pro-LGBT messages followed moves by video game players and creators in recent months to increase visibility, LGBTQ visibility, that is, and this is really exciting stuff. I have said this repeatedly. We want representation and presence across the spectrum, and the gaming spectrum is a really important part of everything going on in our society, in our culture, so that gamers can experience pro-LGBTQ messages really and truly makes a difference. Visibility makes a difference. So love what's going on there with humans and squids in the Nintendo Switch game Splatoon 2. I just like saying it, Splatoon 2. Over on Ask Reddit, there's an amazing thread where the LGBTQ community has come together to share what they wish heterosexual people knew about their life. In this thread, people spoke about the fears and frustrations that they encounter that straight people might not understand. The stereotypes about being in the LGBTQ community were the most frustrating thing for some people. One person said this quote, "As a gay man, it doesn't mean I'm remotely interested in talking fashion or being your gay best friend." A second person added, quote, "In high school, I identified as gay. I came out to someone who flat out denied I was gay because I wasn't a sassy fashionista." For others, they felt that heterosexuals could never comprehend the fear of coming out to family and friends. One person wrote this, quote, "The mere thought of coming out is terrifying, let alone the actual act. The fear that is always there is that more subtle nagging fear that things will just never be the same." Someone else commented, quote, "I also feel like people don't understand that coming out never really ends." And that is such an important point. People think there's this assumption that coming out is the singular process. You did it. You came out. You told your friends and family. No. You acquire new friends. You start new jobs. You encounter new people. You participate in the gaming world, whatever it might be. And you have to come out over and over again. I just came out of the closet today. Today. I have been out to my parents since I was 18 years old, so it's been a while. One could argue 22 years since I've been out. But I came out to my students today, and those were my first-year students. It came up in conversation. It came up as part of our dialogue. Same thing happened last night with my graduate students. I didn't wake up yesterday morning and decide, I'm coming out of the closet. And I certainly didn't wake up yesterday morning and say, I'm done coming out. That has all happened already. But it came up in conversation last night in class as part of a conversation about identity, and I ended up coming out. And I still have fears about, okay, are there going to be students in my class who don't want to learn from me now? Are there going to be students for whom this is going to be a barrier for them? And as much as I don't want it to be a barrier for them, I still do have that concern. So coming out is a continuous process. So this Reddit thread, which I was able to check out, it's so amazing to see all of these different sentiments collected in one place. And this is why it's so important. If you are able to be in a safe place and have these really important conversations with the people around you, it's important to dispel these myths. There were so many more that were expressed. I love this one. Someone wrote, quote, "We're not attracted to every one of our preferred sex." Yeah, that's really important for people to understand. There's so many assumptions. Another quipped about being bisexual and blending in with heterosexuals. They wrote this, quote, "It's like you've infiltrated the straight people. A bi spy or a spy sexual." I've never heard about that before. Other people opened up about their fears of homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia and the precautions that they need to take. This is perhaps one of the most significant out there. Someone wrote, quote, "I still look around me before holding my boyfriend's hand." Again, "I still look around me before holding my boyfriend's hand." I live in Cleveland. I love living in Cleveland. I find Cleveland to be incredibly embracing of the LGBTQ community, and still I get nervous when I'm holding someone's hand. I absolutely do. This person continued, "We both drop hands when we walk near a group or a person that makes us wary. Worst part is, we don't even talk about it anymore. I always feel so ashamed of myself for being self-conscious about this, but it's almost second nature." Yeah. "I still look around me before holding my boyfriend's hand." So much work to do. So that's over on Reddit. Let's go back to Donald Trump. Donald Trump's pastor, Franklin Graham, claimed that the solar eclipse that happened earlier this week is a reminder of God's pending judgment. Franklin Graham, who is a pastor with close ties to President Trump, he preached to millions at his inauguration. He made the claim this week. He is an outspoken opponent of LGBT rights. I am talking about Pastor Graham, though I do have questions about whether Donald Trump is as well. He had previously claimed, Pastor Graham, that there had been a moral 9/11 in America due to gays and lesbians. In a cheerful message to mark the solar eclipse, he took the moment to warn about the upcoming apocalypse. He wrote this quote, "Throughout history, some have associated a solar eclipse with a warning of God's pending judgment." He said, quote, "Today, a solar eclipse will cross the United States from the Pacific Northwest to the Southeast. I don't know if this is a sign of his judgment, but as the moon's shadow crosses our nation, may it be a reminder to all of us to pray, to confess our sins, to repent and ask for God's forgiveness, and to pray that God will heal our broken land." That is Donald Trump's pastor, Franklin Graham. It's like the gays caused the eclipse. I don't think we did, but some people think we did. Can we do happy news? We need some happy news. An assistant coach with the San Francisco 49ers, who, by the way, is only the second full-time female coach, she is now the first openly gay coach in history. Katie Sowers joined the 49ers as an assistant earlier this month. She spoke to OutSports this week to discuss the role in being openly gay. She said this, quote, "No matter what you do in life, one of the most important things is to be true to who you are." I love that. She continued by saying, "There are so many people who identify as LGBT in the NFL, as in any business, that do not feel comfortable being public about their sexual orientation. The more we can create an environment that welcomes all types of people, no matter their race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, the more we can help ease the pain and burden that many carry every day." A retired NFL player who came out as gay earlier this year has said that life is great now. That was Ryan O'Callaghan, who came out as gay back in June. He was drafted to the New England Patriots in 2006, and he also played for the Kansas City Chiefs. There has only been one openly gay player in NFL history. That was St. Louis Rams player Michael Sam. Sam did not have a glittering career and was later cut from the team amid intense media scrutiny. He then had brief spells with the Dallas Cowboys and Canadian Football League's Montreal Alouettes, but he eventually crashed out of the sport, citing mental health issues. So much work to do. Now, this is exciting, right? Like, these are good things. Not Michael Sam, that's not a great story, but that Katie Sowers, who has joined the NFL as only the second full-time female coach and the first openly gay coach in history. We know that there are LGBT players who are out there, but it's still a climate where LGBTQ people do not feel comfortable coming out. And we certainly are seeing pitfalls to them doing so. So there you go. We had positive moves in the world of gaming, certainly a positive move in the world of athletics, but so much more work to do. And with that, my friends, let's take a quick musical break, and we will be back with more news.
Poor, poor, poet-hearted, outproduced and way outsmarted, short of tools for sure. Poet-hearted, you dream like an engine, but you never get started. What's all that paper on your floor? And you wonder how it got dark in here. You took the light for a given. And you wonder how she got dead in her bed.
All right, right, folks, and we are back yet again with even more LGBTQ news. Holy cow, are you guys getting a lot of LGBTQ news this week? Let's turn to the wonderful world of pop culture. I have bad news for you. I don't want to have to be the one who tells you this. I'm hoping you heard from somebody else. I don't want to be the one who breaks this news to you, but I must say that the planned reboot of the cult lesbian TV series Xena, Warrior Princess, has been scrapped. I'm sorry. Last year, it was reported that NBC had ordered a new Xena pilot. Well, the 1990s TV series, Xena, Warrior Princess, as we all know, gained a strong lesbian following during its initial run due to an implied romance. It got more explicit as the series went on between Xena and her companion, Gabrielle. People say it was subtext, but again, by the end of the series, it was pretty explicit. The planned reboot, however, there was going to be no subtext. Xena was going to be completely out of the closet, with the gay romance expected to feature heavily in the new series. But in a blow to fans this week, NBC confirmed that the project is dead. I'm sorry. We were hoping that too. I've never seen a full episode of Xena. I've caught so many glimpses, and I just love the place that it has in our culture. So there you go. Sorry, guys. No more Xena. Now, this is a very sad story, and it involves ice cream. I don't like sad stories that involve ice cream, but a restaurant has refused to serve a gay couple an ice cream sundae with two spoons. I kid you not. The couple, Ron Gage and Henry McKinnon, said that they enjoyed their romantic evening at the Prime Rib restaurant in Washington, D.C. until they got to dessert. I don't even understand that. That should be absolutely the best part of the whole meal, but not so much. The couple said their server had refused to serve an ice cream sundae and two spoons. They told the Washington Post, quote, "When it came time for dessert, we asked for one sundae with two spoons. But the server said it, quote, wouldn't look right with two gentlemen eating out of the same sundae. It doesn't go with the ambiance of the restaurant." The couple said they were speechless at the assertion that they couldn't simply have two spoons. Writing on Facebook and Yelp, one of them wrote this, quote, "It was so humiliating. It was unbelievable how it made us feel." The couple have said that they are angry at the show of discrimination. The restaurant manager said he had not been able to speak with the server and he was unclear what had happened. James McLeod, the manager, said that English is not the server's first language in an attempt to defend the restaurant against criticisms. McLeod, the manager, said this, quote, "I am not sure if he got confused as to what he was saying or how he was saying it." Many took to Yelp to say they would not be eating in the restaurant anymore. One wrote, quote, "Me and my family will never eat here again, a homophobic restaurant in Washington, D.C. in 2017, shaking my head." Well, there you go. I don't like sad stories that in any way involve ice cream. Any story that involves ice cream is a happy story to me, but not so much at the Prime Rib restaurant there in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump. President Trump has nominated a former talk show host who linked homosexuality to pedophilia for a top role in his administration. I probably should have covered this as one of the top stories, and it's now here in the last half of the show, the last third of the show. But yeah, this is a really big deal. The Republican billionaire, whose name is Sam Clovis, is the former host of radio talk show Impact with Sam Clovis. He has been nominated to a role as Under Secretary of Agriculture for Research, Education, and Economics in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So first there's the part where he doesn't do research or education or economics, and he was nominated to this role. And then there's the part where he has said horribly, horribly offensive things in the past. Clovis is the former national co-chair of the Trump-Pence campaign, shock of shockers, and a White House advisor. He was exposed as a homophobe by CNN's K-File this week. K-File found evidence dating from 2012 to 2014 that Clovis had claimed that gay rights reforms would lead to legal pedophilia. In one clip, he claimed this, quote, "Someone who engages in LGBT behavior as far as we know, LGBT behavior is a choice they make. So we're being asked to provide constitutional protections for behavior, a choice in behavior as opposed to a primary characteristic. There's no equivalency there between the civil rights issue associated between those protected classes and the civil rights of someone who engages in a particular behavior. But he did not stop there. He went on to say this: follow the logic. If you engage in a particular behavior, what also becomes protected? If we protect LGBT behavior, what other behaviors are we going to protect? Are we going to protect, of course, everyone, pedophilia? It's the homophobic people who go straight to pedophilia. It is not the LGBTQ community that goes straight to pedophilia. It is the opposition to the LGBTQ community. And this is a guy who, again, has never worked in agriculture before. By the way, he said so many other things. He has said so many other horribly homophobic things. But can we also just do the part where he's not qualified to be the Undersecretary of Agriculture for Research, Education, and Economics in the United States Department of Agriculture? He's never worked in agriculture, research, education, or economics. But he was the co-chair of the Trump-Pence campaign, and he's a White House advisor. So I don't get the position, but this guy, Sam Clovis, he's now the Undersecretary of Agriculture for Research, Education, and Economics. Give me a break. Anyway, let's do another fun story. We need fun stories. A kindergarten teacher is combining his drag performances with education, and it's very inspiring. Toronto-based John Paul Kane is a school teacher with a part-time love of drag. Speaking about combining his work, he said that it was wonderful to be able to bring together his love of working with kids with my performance. He said this, quote, "I've always been very creative and dramatic. There's just something kind of magical in the transformation. I'm still me." Kane explained that he draws inspiration for his drag persona, Faye, from the children he teaches. He said this, quote, "Ultimately, my kids have influenced my style, the music I choose, and the colors of my costume. The kids have inspired her more than anything else." He added that drag and children were the perfect combinations because children love the over-the-top nature. The teacher and performer spoke about his drag teaching to Today's Parent, that publication, because he runs a storytelling session, Faye and Fluffy, across Toronto as well as other North American locations. He explained that he hopes that by doing it, he will break down the stigma around LGBTQ culture and eliminate homophobia in future generations. I absolutely love this story. This is just a person being their authentic self. Love that. Absolutely love that. Now, another education story is not so happy. This one shreds me. It absolutely shreds me, and I almost don't want to talk about it, but because I'm going to lose it. I'm telling you right now, I'm probably going to lose it, but I'm recording this late at night, and I don't want to wake up the neighborhood, so I hopefully won't lose it. Parents at a school in Alabama, the great state of Alabama, parents at a school in Alabama are demanding the removal of a rainbow flag put up in a classroom to celebrate LGBT tolerance. The flag, which is at Auburn High School in Alabama, was made by members of a school club last week and put on display in a teacher's classroom. But angry parents have demanded that the symbol be torn down. And not only do they want it torn down, but they've equated it with a Confederate flag. Hundreds, I'm telling you, hundreds have signed an online petition which compares the flag to a Confederate flag, widely seen, you know, the Confederate flag as a racist symbol in support of slavery. This is what the petition says. You ready? This is what the petition says. Quote, "Flying of the pride flag can create a hostile and uncomfortable learning environment for students who come from families that do not support the LGBTQ community. Subjecting or explicitly exposing students from diverse political backgrounds to political views differing from theirs can make students uncomfortable and distract them from learning the material assigned to them, preventing them from reaching their full potential. We feel that an expression of these views only drives a wedge between students with differing viewpoints and can alienate students with unpopular, and I guess that means homophobic, political and or religious views from the popular majority in the class, further deteriorating the classroom and learning environment." Now here's where this gets fun. Not just that they're spending time on this, but this is where this really gets really fun. The petition went on to say this, quote, "We would like for you to consider the uproar and chaos that would ensue were a teacher to hang, for example, a Confederate, Christian, or heterosexual flag in their classroom. There would likely be protests, emails from teachers, and threatenings of lawsuits from parents with differing viewpoints. First of all, is there a heterosexual flag? Should I Google that right now? Like, as we're talking to each other right now, or as I'm talking to you and you're listening, I have no idea if there's a heterosexual flag, and we're going to discover this together right this very second on the air. I don't see... Oh, there totally is a heterosexual flag. By the way, I didn't think that was a thing. It is a black and white striped flag. I don't think this is real. It's really ugly. Yeah, I'm not sure there really is a heterosexual flag. But this black and white striped flag does pop up. So let's just maybe say that someone tried to have a heterosexual flag at some point. That's a dumb flag. Also, we talked about this on last week's show because there was this pundit on Fox News who equated the Confederate flag to the rainbow flag. What the hell are you guys talking about? Those two could not be more dissimilar. They could not be more dissimilar. The Confederate flag was a flag that was, you know, used to endorse slavery. That's what the Confederate flag was all about, to commemorate history, to commemorate secession, which was all about slavery. It was all about suppressing other voices. The rainbow flag is about lifting up voices. It's about celebrating a community that has had so much power taken away from it that still is not equal in this society, because we're not. We absolutely do not have equal rights. We don't have equal protection under the law in employment, in housing, in public accommodations, in adoption, in blood donation. Can I please go on? Because I would like to stop right now. So I am going to stop right there. The rainbow flag is about celebrating. The Confederate flag is also, I guess according to some, about celebrating, but it's not celebrating anything positive. It's not good at all. So stop equating these two flags. It's come up twice in 2 weeks that we've heard about. The petition ended, "We ask that the pride flag be removed from Auburn High School in order to preserve a welcoming, beneficial, and unbiased learning environment for students from all political backgrounds." By the way, there's no such thing as an unbiased learning environment. There's absolutely no such thing as an unbiased learning environment. That's not a thing. You have to create a space where everyone can contribute. You have to create a space where marginalized voices can be lifted up. But it's impossible to have a completely unbiased learning environment. As a professor, I'm telling you that's not possible. Now, happily, a rival petition has gone up in support of the rainbow flag. The petition, started by a student at the school, says this, quote, "The Pride flag and the Auburn High School Educate Club has served to provide a healthy environment for our LGBTQ peers to feel comfortable being who they truly are. The flag represents this safe space, and frankly, the sentiment for removing the Pride flag is an affront to the work that has been done nationally to fight for recognition of the community. We not only refute the points of the original complaint, but stand by the teacher's decision and right to display the Pride flag, especially as the sponsor of the Auburn High School Educate Club." The superintendent of the school has said this, quote, "It has been brought to the attention of Auburn City Schools and Auburn High School that a petition from a group of anonymous students and parents was sent to Dr. Sharon Pignato, the principal of Auburn High School. As of noon, she has not been presented with that petition. She is aware of the situation, though, and is working with staff and students to address those concerns." I certainly, certainly hope this pride flag stays up. And I also hope the teacher is in no way reprimanded, because that's going to really, really annoy me. New study out. A new study has discovered that transgender teenagers are twice as likely to have substance abuse issues than their cisgender peers. Writing in the Journal of School Health, the study from Chapman University examined data from hundreds of schools in California and discovered an alarming, alarming trend. The study covered nearly 5,000 transgender students and over 600,000 cisgender students over a period of 2 years. It looked at recent in-school and lifetime use of a number of substances, including cocaine and ecstasy, prescription medications, and cough medicine. The study pointed, this is the key piece, the study pointed to the social difficulties that trans teens face, saying, quote, "Transgender adolescents face tremendous social stress in families and schools, which often leads to behavioral health disparities." It's not, my friends, and you guys know this, but you got to tell other people, it's not that trans students are more likely to use alcohol and other drugs because they are more chemically balanced towards addiction. It's not that at all. It's because of the social lubrication effects provided by alcohol and other drugs. It's because of the escapism provided by alcohol and other drugs. It's because of the marginalization and a way to somehow get away from that that trans teens so disproportionately use alcohol and other drugs. There is so much work to be done here. This is where we have to protect our youth, our trans youth. They are experiencing these unbelievable rates of depression and anxiety and alcohol and other drug use. And if we worked harder, we could address that. So I'm committed to talking about it on the show. What are you committed to doing? Because that, as always, my friends, is the big question that we talk about all the time on the show. What are you committed to doing? Whether you are like me, whether you are like Jeffrey Masters and you want to start your own podcast, this is the age when it is so easy to start your own podcast. Do it. Maybe that's the way you use your voice. Maybe you need to write a letter to your editor. Maybe you need to contact your elected representatives. They love hearing from you. They need to hear from you. Whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference, you have to get out there and do it. I tell you this week in and week out. And again, this is the 415th week of doing this show. So you are getting this message. I promise you, using your voice in this way will make a difference and you will feel great in the process. Trust me, get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to do it to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Hearted, the rules of play have been disregarded. Turns out there's no such thing as fair. Oh, you poet-hearted, gnash your teeth and tear your hair out like some Shakespeare character. And you'd be taken much more seriously if you'd stop telling stories at the bar. You've been denied your Magna Carta or any hope at history. Oh, you poet-hearted, you only love the big uncharted. It's so much smaller than you're born to believe. If I told the truth,